The reading this morning is from the book of Esther, reading from chapter 4. It starts on page 503 of the church Bibles, if you have them. When Mordecai learnt of all that had been done, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the city, wailing loudly and bitterly. But he went only as far as the king's gate, because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter it. In every province to which the edict and order of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's eunuchs and female attendants came and told her about Mordecai, she was in great distress. She sent clothes for him to put on instead of his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Then Esther summoned Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, assigned to attend her, and ordered him to find out what was troubling Mordecai and why. So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city, in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text for the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa, to show to Esther and explain it to her. And he told him to instruct her to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people. Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, "All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death unless the king extends the gold scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king." When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer: "Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this?" Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai: "Go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks very much, Roy. Exactly 3 years ago to the day, this day, 26th of March, our family had rather a dramatic evening. Our son came home with a bruise on his ankle, which we thought was an injury. But then the bruise started spreading all over other parts of his body and began to look like the rash that you might associate with meningitis or sepsis. We did that glass test and it didn't bring us any comfort, so before long I was on my way to A&E. We were still local at the time, so it was our local A&E. At first things moved very slowly, we had to wait a bit, but then when members of staff saw his skin, everything suddenly sped up And before long, there were seven doctors around his bed, machinery wheeled in, needles and medicines piled up ready to go, and one very scared little boy, and actually one quite scared mummy too. Meanwhile, back home, our life group had started gathering, as they did every Wednesday evening, and we hadn't had a chance to cancel them. So what they did was dispatch Simon to come to the hospital with me, and they would babysit and pray back at base while we were there. In the hospital, the line had gone into Benin's arm. Goodness knows how many tubes of blood had come out. And whilst we waited for the results of those, a large helping of a general antibiotic had gone in. The slightly odd thing about the whole situation was that Ben didn't have a temperature, and apart from some aches and pains, he didn't seem to be as ill as the rash would suggest. But of course, no one takes chances in these circumstances. He was on close watch, and all precautions were taken. It was at this point that one of the nurses remembered that earlier that evening in the hospital, a paediatric dermatologist had come in. Very unusually, she'd been called to another patient. And the nurse thought that as the specialist was here, she might just ask her to pop her head round to see if she had time to have a look at Ben. Apparently, she was meant to have left the hospital much earlier, but because of delays, she was only just finishing now. And even though she'd worked an extremely long day and was meant to have been home hours ago, she did pop her head round the curtain amongst the puzzled doctors and the slight sense of foreboding. And within a few short moments, she diagnosed Ben with something called Henloch-Schönlein purpura, a rare autoimmune condition. I'm looking at a doctor just to see if that registers. A rare autoimmune condition, and that none of the doctors in the room had come across it before. It was still quite serious, but thankfully not in our case the awful news that it could have been. Ben was started immediately on the correct medicine. A treatment plan was devised and the specialist worked with us on that. And soon Ben and I were on our way to one of those desperately comfy beds that many of you will know in Outwood Ward to enjoy a few days of hospitality on the NHS before being treated and monitored at home. Here he is a couple of days later looking in much better shape. If it hadn't have been for that consultant dermatologist being in the right place at the right time for us, Ben would likely have been in quite severe pain for days. Things would have got worse before they got better. He might have been pumped full of the wrong medicines with the best intentions whilst we waited for a diagnosis. Some might say that was just a coincidence. I think God heard the prayers of our people and he gave us a right time, right place miracle. Esther 4:14 contains some of the most famous words in the Bible. Sometimes they're a little bit overused, but they're these. As Mordecai says to Esther, "Who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this?" But Mordecai tells Esther that perhaps God is doing a momentous right place, right time miracle. The Hebrews have been praying for years for deliverance from the Babylonians and then the Persians. These are cruel regimes. And Esther is in the right place at the right moment to take action. But here's the thing. In this story, Esther isn't played like some sort of glamorous chess piece. God doesn't sit on his throne in heaven saying rook h8 to h4 as Esther moves according to his plan. Esther, of course, has to make choices in this situation, and frankly, they are huge choices. Her first choice comes in verse 4, where she sends clothes to Mordecai, who's chosen the traditional dress of mourning, wearing sackcloth. Esther knows that he's come as close as he can to the king, and he is on the verge of being in great danger. Ancient Asian kings were kept wrapped in this kind of artificial paradise that was not meant to be spoilt by any unpleasantness and certainly not by mourning. Mordecai was taking a measured but nonetheless large risk in approaching the castle dressed as he was. Esther's choice to send him clothes was probably twofold in its purpose. Firstly, to protect his safety, but also to allow him perhaps to make it further into the royal court so that he could get a message to her. And of course, Mordecai, a man of principle, doesn't accept the clothes, so she has to be resourceful and make another choice. She sends one of her staff to ask what the problem is. She can't go herself. It's quite likely she's not actually allowed to leave the castle, maybe even the women's quarters, and Mordecai is certainly not allowed in to that part. So the servant goes with the message, and the conversation of messages backwards and forwards ensues. Mordecai, who we already know is a strong character from earlier chapters, from his refusal to bow to the king, from his provocative wearing of mourning dress near the castle, uses highly persuasive language to convince Esther that she must use her influence to intervene, otherwise all the Jews in Persia, which potentially was around 15 million people, will be killed. No pressure. Mordecai doesn't pull any punches when he reminds Esther that God will achieve his purposes. He will. Mordecai's faith in that is unshakable. But if he has to achieve his purposes without her, because after all he is God, there may be loss of life, and it may include her own. Esther is called, despite huge challenges, to choose to use the influence she's been given for God's purpose. It has all, Mordecai says, been building up to this moment. She's in the right place at the right time. Pause there, dot, 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 to be continued. And let's go from Esther's situation to our own situation. St. Mary's, as you may know, is a home to many, many people of influence. This church has people who hold the respect and sometimes the obedience of others. And that is a huge blessing to our community. Most of the time. The fact that there are head teachers, managers, people who run their own businesses, senior hospital staff, government officials, journalists, lawyers, team leaders, vicars, police officers, supervisors, and on this Mothering Sunday, I know of a fair few fierce mamas here with significant influence, both inside and outside their family. Influence is a significant and powerful tool. We might conclude from the story of Esther that it's also a God-given tool. And I wonder if Mordecai's impassioned plea to Esther comes to our ears too. What is God calling us to do with the influence he has given us? It might not be on the scale of saving 15 million people from genocide at the hands of a cruel regime. But on the other hand, it might be. Has God put you in a position of influence, however great or small, for such a time as this? And if we find ourselves making excuses about how insignificant our influence is, we can't really do anything about it, well, we're in good company. Esther says the same thing of herself. She reminds Mordecai that she's not allowed to enter into the king's presence by choice. She has to be invited, and he hasn't actually invited her for the best part of a month. But after making sure that folks are praying earnestly for her, she goes anyway. Spoiler alert, sorry about that. She goes anyway. How does God want you to use your position of influence if you have one? Is it for such a time as this? And just in case there are folks sitting here or listening online who think, oh, phew, that's okay, I can sit this one out. I've absolutely no influence whatsoever. I'm off the hook on this one. I'm afraid there's just a bit more. Let me introduce you to Hathach. Hathach, we met him in verse 5. Hathach is the king's servant, the messenger. It's likely that Hathach didn't cut it in the king's court, and he's been assigned to the women's chambers. Serving women culturally is pretty much the lowest of the low if you're employed or in some kind of role. He could even have been a slave, we don't know. Hathach is also described as a eunuch. All kinds of discussions, lots of people, Old Testament scholars who'd love to have a debate about what that means, but it is possible that Hathach has been emasculated for this task, a kind of insurance policy, because he spends most of his time with women who are reserved for the king and the king alone. It wasn't that unusual in the ancient East. That gives us an idea of the brutality of that society. It was also possible, and perhaps even likely, that Hathach, now here, and in the NIV it's spelled H-A-T-H-A-K, but in the NRSV it's spelled H-A-T-H-A-C-H at the end, which might give it an idea of being a Hebrew word, an Aramaic word, and therefore possibly Hathach was a Jew. And if that is the case, that he has been emasculated for this task, that consigns him again to the lowest of the low in Jewish community, because he's not welcome in the temple. He's not clean. He's not ceremonially pure anymore. So Hathach is one of the lowest and least influential, either in Persian culture or Jewish culture, whichever one he feels part of. And yet he plays a critical part in this encounter. He too takes huge risks. He's in the employment of the king, and yet he facilitates a discussion between the king's wife and another man. He too has to make a choice to make himself available in this situation. Whether or not he knows it's for God's purposes, he will know that it is for the purpose of saving the lives of many millions of people. But for his courage and willingness to cooperate, Mordecai's plan to lever the use of Esther's influence is completely hopeless and non-starter. I wonder if Hathach too was in the right place at the right time. I wonder if he was in position for such a time as this. And so I wonder that for us too. Of course, Hathach probably had no idea of the significance of his actions, not fully. And you know, we may never know that either. But a willingness to serve, backed up, this is critical, backed up by the prayers and in this story, the faithful fasting of God's people, are a hugely powerful combination. We may want to use our influence sometimes to gain more influence. We may want to use our influence for the purpose of building up our organisation or our business or our work or whatever it is. I encourage all of us, whatever influence we hold, what level, and by the way, if we live in the West, we have a front door and a computer, we have influence compared to many in the world. Whatever influence we have, is God asking us to use it for such a time as this?